Okay. So, if you could start off by introducing yourself and the background you have on environmental topics.
Sure. I'm Michelle Amos. I am an environmental science teacher at the Westridge School. I've been teaching environmental science now for, 11 years. That feels really long. Prior to that, I was a biology teacher, so sort of did ecology and things like that. Not specifically an expert in wildfires, but obviously growing up in Australia and being exposed to drought a lot of my childhood and experiencing some major bushfires in Australia, it's something that you are very related to, I suppose, more than anything else.
Okay. Thank you for that. So my first question is, how would you define a wildfire?
Basically, it is an out-of-control fire is probably the best way of explaining it, because fire is one thing that can definitely be used and it can help an environment. But in terms of a wildfire, it's basically one that is not under any form of control, basically. And even when the fire department do fight them, they talk about the percentage of it that is under control kind of situation. So it's basically that something that's burning and that's getting fueled by low-level fuel, and then it can obviously run up trees and all of those sorts of things, depending.
Mm-hmm. And so, building off of that, can you start off with a little background information on wildfires, which may include the most popular or least expected causes of them and places they are most popular?
Sure. Basically, there's a couple of things that can cause a wildfire. Unfortunately, most of them are human-related, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The natural occurring one is obviously a lightning strike that hits something dry and then it catches fire and it goes from there. And that is very much, as I said, a natural wildfire. In comparison, anthropogenically, which is human-based, you've got things like, say, campfires that aren't extinguished properly and so the sparks fly. Sometimes they can even come from chimneys and things like that. So ash or sparks that are still ignited can land. They can come from car accidents where a car has crashed and therefore can explode and things like that. And obviously with petroleum and things like that involved with the cars, the fire can go from there. They can also happen from, unfortunately, the reflection of glass, broken glass that can magnify the heat and the intensity that can actually start a fire and smoking with dry grasses and things like that. So trash being left around, for instance, can cause them as well. So there are definitely more anthropogenic reasons for wildfire than obviously naturally occurring ones. In terms of locations or popularity of locations, generally speaking, they tend to occur anywhere that there is a lot of dry fuel. So if we have, say, for instance, in California, we'll probably in the next couple of years head into a fairly high fire danger because we've had so much rain in the last sort of winter, in the last couple of winters. It means that the plants grow, they become really healthy, and then as a result of heat during summer, they dry out and therefore they become fuel. And so therefore they can catch very, very quickly. So with a lot of fuel and very little maintenance, that's when you end up with basically a perfect storm for a wildfire in terms mm-hmm. of things. And that's actually what happened in the major bushfires that happened in California, sort of near Malibu and things like that, a couple of years ago, was the fact that we had had a really wet winter. Summer was really dry. It was towards the end of the drought as well. And we had so much fuel that it literally caught fire and it just spread. Obviously, it gets accelerated by wind. And so if the wind is blowing in the right direction and things like that, it causes the fire to accelerate and travel and all those sorts of things. So, yeah.
Thank you. That was very detailed. So as many people know, California is known for their wildfires. Mm-hmm. And so since California is known for wildfires and has one of the highest wildfire rates globally, can you talk about the reasons why this particular state may have one of the highest wildfire rates?
There are definitely a couple of reasons. One is obviously drought, and that's a really, really big one, because obviously without enough rain, then vegetation obviously dries out, and the drier it is, the more combustible it is. So that is definitely one situation. Another situation is also our topography, in the fact that wildfires actually run faster uphill than downhill. Mm-hmm. And so because there are large areas of California that are hilly and sometimes quite treacherous in terms of being able to get to areas of fire in those mountainous areas, that the fires can run much, much faster in those situations. And so they can get out of hand very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of it has to do with drought more than anything else. And also the fact that, again, without that maintenance, and that's like people taking care of their properties and things like that, and reducing the amount of dead vegetation that they actually have around, then that increases the risks of fires as well.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any ways of how wildfires may be beneficial towards differing ecosystems?
Absolutely. Fire is actually beneficial to many ecosystems, and a lot of people kind of don't realize that. Mm-hmm. And again, coming from Australia, a lot of our plants are actually fire retardant. They have evolved to actually beat fires, so they may burn on the outside, but the actual inside is protected. There are also various species of plants that actually need fire for regeneration. So they need that heat, and they need the intensity of the heat to actually open their seed pods so that then they can grow and release those seeds. And so there are definite ecosystems that require fire. And so that's where we get into a discussion of fire management, and is it a good thing or is it a bad thing, and how it can be very beneficial to actually some ecosystems for them to regenerate and grow. Unfortunately, in a lot of environments, if the environments and the ecosystems aren't maintained or aren't allowed to undergo their natural processes, then obviously what causes the issue more than anything else is the heat and the intensity of the wildfires. Mm-hmm. Because with lots of fuel and lots of vegetation means that it can burn faster, it can burn hotter, and as a result, then it literally can be more devastating because it literally burns through everything. So fire has both good benefits and bad benefits, and fire management is something that was very much a process that we used to do in history in terms of maintaining ecosystems and things like that. And then, unfortunately, a lot of people kind of started to talk about how it was bad for the environment in terms of pollution and the carbon that was being released and things like that. But again, some ecosystems actually need fire to regenerate, so it's actually very beneficial to them.
Okay, so in addition to that, can you elaborate on how wildfires and smoke from wildfires might affect humans and wildlife and our society we have today?
Sure, absolutely. So obviously, all plants store carbon. It's part of how they grow. Their tissues are actually carbon-based. And so whenever there is a fire, that carbon gets burnt and released, and it normally gets released as carbon dioxide. And so that does go into the atmosphere. Part of the natural carbon-oxygen cycle is the fact that that can then be recaptured through photosynthesis and then re-released through cellular respiration. So it is a naturally occurring process, and it is not necessarily, and I hate to use this term, bad for the environment, because fire is a natural process. It's the intensity in the and the acceleration that causes more issues at the moment due to climate change. And so the actual release of that carbon into the atmosphere, it will end up balancing out and being recaptured. The situation becomes a bit of an issue with the ash and the soot and the smoke that is actually generated, and that can obviously then cause health issues for humans. And thinking of the wildfires we had here in Los Angeles, thinking about 7 years ago now, I think is about right, 6 or 7 years ago, I was actually teaching on the west side at that stage, and the fire jumped the 405. Mm. And the air quality was awful, in the fact that it was hard to see, so you ended up with itchy eyes and watery eyes and difficulty breathing and people coughing and things like that. And that's a healthy person, let alone somebody that suffers from a respiratory disorder that has obviously a greater issue. So it comes down to a discussion of pollution, and it comes down to a discussion of particulate pollution, and that's your ash and that's your debris and things like that that gets carried by the fire or is a product of the fire. And so that those particulates is when it becomes a a human pollution issue more than anything else. And also the air obviously gets, the air quality gets reduced, and it's harder to then breathe, and all of those sorts of things associated.
And you mentioned climate change. Can you elaborate a little more on how wildfires affect global warming and climate change in our world?
I think it's actually the other way around. I actually think climate change and global warming is actually impacting on fires more than the other way around. And the reason being is because as the earth is getting hotter and climate change is occurring, what actually ends up happening is these fires are getting a lot more intense, and they're happening more often. And that, again, comes down to the fact that we're also having more droughts. So all of those things get connected together, and as a result, we're becoming more prone to wildfires. And not only that, but we're also becoming more prone to more dangerous and destructive wildfires as a result.
Okay. Okay, thank you for that. I just have one last question.
Sure.
Can you give a little advice on how one could prepare for a wildfire, or some ways to prevent wildfires from happening, or provide advice on what to do in the midst of one?
Absolutely. So there's definitely sort of three things there. One, in terms of preparing for a wildfire. Again, this is something that I have friends that live in fire districts in Australia, and as a result, they are always prepared. Like if it's fire season, they always have their fire plan in terms of their escape plan, when they're going to leave, are they going to stay and protect their properties, all that kind of stuff. They also have like bank lock boxes that have, which is where they store all of their fundamental files, like passports and birth certificates and property documents and things like that, so that then they're protected, so that when they come back to their property, they can say, well, actually, no, this is still ours in effect. They've still got their identities and all of that kind of stuff. So there's always a case of having a fire plan is always essential. That is one thing, like knowing when you're going to go and how you're going to go, because if not, then sometimes you make the decision too late and you can't get out because the roads are blocked or things like that. Like a lot of the time the fire department will suggest or request that you evacuate, and 9 times out of 10 that's actually so that you're not in the area, so they've got clear access to get in and out. You're not causing traffic jams and things like that. More than sort of waiting and everybody kind of deciding when they want to go. But there is that, firstly, you should always have a plan, and in very much the same way that in California we have earthquake plans in terms of what do we do in an earthquake. Well, this is the situation. Fire is very much the same. So that's one thing. In terms of if you are ever in a fire zone, you need to make sure that you have the area around your house as clear as possible. And so that means no sort of leaf debris, reducing the amount of trees that are like in very close proximity to the house. Especially you don't want any overhanging roofs, because ashes fall on the roof and that's how houses catch on fire a lot of the time. Also in California, with so many of our houses and buildings being built out of wood as well, they're more inclined to burn. And so as a result, you need to make sure that you've definitely got an area of clearance around your property, and make sure things like gutters are clear and things like that as well. So those sorts of preventative measures are always really, really important. If you're ever stuck in a fire, there's always a couple of things that you need to do. If you know it's coming, again, make the decision to leave and leave early. That's fundamental first and foremost. If you are ever stuck in an actual fire area, you need to basically get below, like if you're in your car, for instance, you need to get below the level of the windows, and you need to cover yourself over with something like a wool blanket, something that's something that's fire retarded, basically. Because if you're above, like if you're level with the windows, the radiation of the heat will come through first and then the fire. If you're below that level, you'll be a little bit more protected. So that's one thing. Unfortunately, you will never outrun a fire. So you can never, ever kind of sit there and go, oh, I'm just going to get out of my car, for instance, and make a run for it. It's very, very unlikely to happen. So you always just need to be, really particularly careful about those sorts of things. Make sure, obviously, if you are escaping a fire, you've got plenty of water on you, so that not only can you drink it, but you can also douse yourself in it as well, as a preventative measure. Always wear, like, again, if you're in a fire area, when you're packing a bag, make sure they're natural fibers like wool or cotton that is highly unflammable so that they don't burn, they don't stick to you, they don't melt like synthetic fibers actually can. So a lot of those sorts of things more than anything else. But yeah, you definitely always want to take protection behind something that is like a big log on the ground, for instance, that you can kind of get really close to, go over, and the fire can, and the heat and radiation can go over the top of you more than anything else.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. That's all I have for today, but this was all very helpful.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
You're welcome.